efforts in not only putting the appropriate value on the work that we do, but also further educating homeowners on the cost of homeownership and operating costs. However, to get to the point and go into some of your remarks before, we do not support the use of the Home Energy Score, the HES, the specific score that you're choosing for new construction. And the reason behind that is, if you talk to builders in my group, they would say that their homes are already a 9 or a 10, so there's really no incentive for them to be pushing that envelope like they've been doing in past years to do even more efficient things and save us even more energy and help our environment even more so. So why would we want to use a score that dissuades them from doing even better than they already are?
If I can just ask you a question, I mean, where is it written that a new home equates to a 9 or a 10 on the home energy audit scale?
It's not written, but they get their homes scored, right? So they usually use an EPS, the Energy Trust EPS, which is a local score that most of my builders use. But they can also get an HES very easily, and they are always a 9 or a 10, usually a 10.
Thank you. Go to you next.
Thank you, Council. My name is Annie Rose Shapiro. I'm a commercial realtor with Workspace Commercial and a residential realtor with Urban Nest Realty. I support the energy audit, and I don't feel my voice has been represented here today. Our job as realtors is to educate and guide our clients as they make the biggest financial decision of their lives. We need this data to uphold our most sacred, if you will, mission. This allows us to guide buyers, sellers, and also current homeowners with hard data that will let them know what the return on investment is going to be when they sell. As we accumulate this data, it will help us learn what this really means. It's not currently valued in the market. 2% of houses are scored, and that makes that data meaningless because there's nothing to compare it to. The most important and impactful part of this score is that every single real estate transaction will include a conversation about sustainability and environmental impacts. As realtors, we are the experts in buying and selling for many of our clients. Housing is a leading source of emissions. They depend on us to educate them, and this allows us to fully integrate this conversation into our day-to-day lives. It's important. We can't rely on messaging and incentives that only reach those who are already converted.
Okay, thank you. Ma'am?
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Theodora Songas, and I'm speaking today on behalf of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. We support the proposed amendment to the city code on residential energy performance rating disclosure. This action will help the city meet its objectives to reduce carbon emissions and reduce energy use of all buildings. We support this because it's a common sense part of the package of actions we must take to meet objectives of the Climate Action Plan and other city resolutions. If we are to address the contributions of buildings to carbon emissions, we must include residences. This is a good way for people to understand and address their own personal impact on carbon emissions. Climate disruption is the most important issue facing humanity. We need to do our part to reduce our contributions to it. We are taking steps in other areas to reduce carbon emissions to meet our climate action objectives. This is one of the domains we must add in order to take responsibility for and reduce our own impacts on climate change. Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility supports this proposed ordinance. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. Okay, we have some more people who want to testify. Come on up. First, like the first three to grab chairs. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jamie Duhamel, and I'm here to speak on behalf of Commissioner-elect Chloe Udaly, who strongly supports this home energy score policy. Chloe Udaly definitely supports everything that's been said today, especially that it will stimulate our economy by providing jobs at local solar, HVAC, plumbing, insulation, and other related local businesses. Commissioner-elect Udaly also supports a requirement for landlords to perform assessments and achieve a minimum level of energy efficiency on rental units. Landlords and tenants would both benefit from energy cost savings, and we all would benefit from associated decreases in carbon pollution. Furthermore, the city should develop a property-assessed clean energy, or PACE, financing mechanism for residential buildings as it has for commercial buildings. PACE loans have funded over $1 billion of energy efficiency and renewable upgrades to residential buildings in California alone. Thanks again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
You've also been selected as the commissioner's new policy director, is that correct?
Correct.
Congratulations and welcome.
Thank you very much. I look forward to working with all of you.
My name is Peter Tofalvi. I am co-owner of Abacus Energy Solutions. I will limit my comments to issues that didn't get enough comments. Inspections don't typically include energy-related information. Inspectors are not trained to understand how the different energy-related systems of a home work together, how well or how poorly they work. And they don't include that information in their reports. I bought a house. I knew what I was getting into, electric ceiling heat, but I still didn't know how much it would cost to heat it because there was no heating bills available from the previous owner. Only after the purchase did I learn that it will cost me $300 to $400 a month to run that electric ceiling heat in the winter. So I had to take another loan to change the heating system in the house. In my opinion, the opposition from real estate professionals is short-sighted. They focus on the added cost and forget the benefit to them, which is this will be one more way to differentiate their products on the market, one more way to advertise differences in their products, to create excitement about features and benefits of a home. This is why real estate professionals on the East Coast first opposed and embraced the Energy Score. I am sure they will do that here too. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Brian Simmons. I'm testifying today as a homeowner, also a landlord locally. I am also the former senior vice president of one of the country's largest energy efficiency consulting firms that has its largest presence here in Portland, named Clear Result. I obviously support this program and this initiative. One of the things that I'd like to point out is that the state of Oregon has done something that a lot of other states haven't done in this nation, which is to actually have a market-based initiative to support these types of scores and these types of audits. Many of the contractors that you saw here locally have their jobs were created because of this. They also integrate the score along with the measures being adopted. You can look to Boston, where there has been a failure, where the utilities did the score and then market had to do the work. On adoption post the audits being done. And then you look in this market, we've had a higher uptake in work where audits have been accomplished. I think the nice part about a score is that it will also add consumer behavior initiatives to this effort where we have seen uptakes in commercial environments with that as well. I'm going to provide some written testimony because I do know time is limited, but I did want to come up and make those points. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay. Who's left? How many? Okay, are you the last three?
The one in the back.
Last four?
Thanks for hanging in there today, folks.
Okay. So these are the last four people that are going to testify today. And we'll start with you.
Thank you. I am one of the low-income homeowners that people have been referring to. My name is Sherry Pelsma. And making a home purchase was the biggest financial decision of my life, and not coming from a background of other people who had owned homes, the process was incredibly intimidating. There were so many things to consider that required inspections helped me to navigate priorities. And I come from the energy world, and so insisted on learning about the energy, you know, score, for lack of a better term. But my brother, who's also a low-income homeowner, had a bad inspector, and he had a bad realtor, and he ended up in a money pit situation when it came to energy. I decided to make energy upgrades instead of the more sexy kitchen remodel upgrades, and I would also like to know that when I sell my home, which is going to be the core of my retirement plan, since I don't get retirement, that I will get rewarded for that in equity and the sales price at the end, which I think this score would help accomplish.
Thank you very much. Sir, go ahead.
Ted Gleichman, Oregon Sierra Club. I will not recapitulate my fascinating testimony, which is being provided to you in hard copy. But I will say a couple of things quickly. We strongly support the excellent work that BPS has done on attention to low-income issues, and we would look forward to engaging on that going forward. The testimony today has made it very clear that that must be a top priority for 2017, because this information does need to be public information, yet people must be prevented from any predatory action affecting them. So there's a tricky balance there, and we'd like to help on that as we can. A couple of fallacies that have been presented. Delay is a fallacy. Energy Trust made it clear that the number of auditors available is adequate now, and more can be quickly added to the market, and that will not likely raise costs, given the Austin experience. Obsolescence of the report is a fallacy, in that if a homeowner doesn't have the money to do anything, then they will still have a valid report by not doing anything until it's time for them to do something. These things can be worked on and updated. BPS is attentive to all of that, and they provided ample attention to the exemption and deferral issue to deal with specific situations. Finally, efficiency and conservation are overlapping but distinct sets of issues. They are not the same thing. Efficiency does not necessarily include conservation, and that's why starting with deep weatherization is so important. Thank you so much.
Commissioners, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm here as the Executive Director of the Home Performance Guild of Oregon. My name is Don McCodrum. I petition you to afford me a few extra moments, as I've asked many of our extra speakers to forego their testimony in lieu
Sorry,
of mine.
We're going to hold you to 1 minute.
All right.
We got to bring staff back up, too.
I understand. Okay. We, as the Residential Energy Efficiency Trade Association, we are at the forefront of every single energy efficiency program as it relates to homes in Oregon, and we are building science practitioners. So when we look at these home energy scores, we know that this is really to address you, Commissioner Fish, that we know that we can rely on multiple tiers of quality control and training and certification to ensure that we've got accurate scoring. We strongly support this as a two-tiered strategy. It's both to insert the energy costs into the purchase process, but it's also to have the score in the hands of the buyers when they're in the most likely position to make upgrades, which is in the first 3 months of their sale. Lastly, I think that this is going to be the single greatest thing to increase energy literacy of the general public. I think that has not been mentioned, and I think that that's a really worthy cause. Thank you so much for this hearing.
Thank you. Okay, we have one... Maybe two. Okay, you're the last two. Come on up. Okay, so go ahead. Just give us your name. You just have 1 minute, and there's a clock in front of you.
Thank you, Commissioners. This is Roger Kainu. I'm an analyst with the Oregon Department of Energy and part of the House Bill 2801 Energy Task Force. We have a stakeholder panel that's been developed by the state of Oregon to bring all of the framework together for home energy performance scoring. And I want to make a key note here about performance. Home energy scoring could be seen as just a list of assets within a home. Performance deals with how those assets interrelate and interact. It's a building science and really needs to be taken a look at. You know, it's not just a list of all the assets that are there. It's how they interrelate together and create a performance, which in the end creates a score. That's what the HES with the United States Department of Energy builds for us. So an assessor goes out, takes track of all the assets, puts them into a software, spits it back out, and it becomes a score of that residence. So with House Bill 2801, we developed a stakeholder panel, an approval process for each scoring system. We have training requirements and licensing of all the assessors, and there are assessors out there available. Outputs of the work have been state-approved scoring systems like the Energy Trust of Oregon, the US DOE model, HES, and then we moved into certification licensing of the assessors, the technical capability that aligns with the US DOE at a national level. So it's not just an independent sort of scoring system, it's across the nation. Also want to be able to mention that utility bill analysis is one way of getting information, but it's very inaccurate. It's been going on for 30 years that I know of. customers call utilities and say, hey, what did the energy bills look like? You may have a family of five living there for years, and all of a sudden a family of two moves in. How does that compare?
Okay, thank you very much.
I need to ask a question. So is what we have before us the kind of performance score that you were mentioning?
Absolutely.
So you support it?
Absolutely.
And could you just tell me a little bit more about why isn't it just adding up all the assets and turning out a number?
Well, if you have a leaky duct system in a house and a very expensive high-performance piece of heating equipment, the outcome of that performance is much lower than if you have a high-performance heating equipment with a very well-sealed, tight duct system.
But wouldn't the leakiness of the ducts be part of the audit?
It would list that that is part of an asset, not as a system. It doesn't compare and pull together the interrelationship of those two individual items.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's very so you're supportive of what we have in head ahead.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
My name is Barbara Kerr, and I'm speaking as a concerned citizen. Very quickly, I'm juggling my notes around here, trying to pare them down. As a teacher, I know that the best way for people to learn is from real-life experiences, and so knowing the energy efficiency of their house or their neighbor's house has a lot more impact than glossy brochures and any list of statistics ever will. The report could help to clear up misconceptions about energy use of houses because it would be real-life information, and such as that old windows must be replaced. We now know that repairing rather than replacing can have a far lower carbon impact. Oftentimes, a new house may be built to code but still have features in it that use a lot of energy that the people may not understand, your hot tub, your extra large open spaces, et cetera. And in the bigger picture, giving them the carbon footprint of their house and being able to compare it to what may happen, the carbon footprint of tearing the house down and building a new one can really educate our public on the long-term benefits of carbon footprint of saving our existing houses.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, let's bring staff back up. I know we have some questions. So just a procedure check. I mean, do we have some amendments in front of us? Which,
yes.
Are we prepared to act on those amendments now, or do we need more time? We'll see where the questions go, I guess.
Let me raise some questions, and then is your goal to have this come back for a second reading next week?
Yeah, I think it was intended to come back December 7th because the mayor is out next week.
So that gives us a little more latitude. Okay. So I'm going to just put the questions on the record, and I don't need answers right now in light of the time. What I would ask is just a written response to these questions early next week or next week. We have the holiday weekend. Number one, on the question of whether we exempt new construction, could you amplify on the commentary that's in the council document about the difference between code-built new homes and high-performance new homes? We've heard from a number of people, and Dan got at this in one of his questions, that the new home construction is close to the top of the scale. So I guess the question is, why do we disagree with that? What's the range that we anticipate? And why do you believe we should include new homes? I'd also be interested in knowing why Austin exempted new homes, just as a policy matter. Number two, if you can guesstimate for me how many transactions you anticipate in the first year into this program would involve low-income homeowners, because there are a number of questions that have been raised, particularly around people's privacy and the potentially triggering predatory practices. And one of the things I'd like to know is if it's a small enough universe, could the city partner with the utilities to create a voucher that offsets the cost so the person gets the score but doesn't have to pay for it? That seems to me to meet our objective while reducing, and since Northwest Natural and others seem to be so bullish on this, could we partner with the utilities to cover that cost? I'm assuming it's a manageable universe of people that would
it's
otherwise...
It's about 5%.
About 5%. If you can quantify that, but I'd like to know what that would look like. Because
yep.
My preference would be to have everyone play, but if someone can't afford it, to find a way to offset the cost. And I think that balances privacy and whatever you've identified as the needs here. Susan, at some point I hope you do come forward with a proposal to ban gasoline-powered leaf blowers. In my new apartment, I hear them every Saturday morning starting about 6, and not only annoying in terms of the sound, but when reading about the environmental impact, I'm not sure why we shouldn't be banning them. And then on the question of how you, in the alternative, how you structure the deferral, waiver, exemption program, again, if you could drill down a little bit and just see, have we captured the universe of people who are already covered by a program that would give them an exemption where all they have to do is check a box and sign it and not have to produce tax returns or other things? And finally, those are all my questions. Thank you.
Mr. Fritz?
Thank you. Some of mine are similar. I'd like to know, is there possibly a default choice for new construction, that if it's just built to code, it's this score, and they can apply if they want to show that it's a high performance, so that they, you know, presumably you would know what the codes are and what kind of a score you're most likely to get. From the testimony, I'd be kind of surprised if it's a 9 or a 10 all the time. So I'd like to have that looked into. I don't support having it posted on portlandmaps.com or any other public. Well, I think it's fine to post it on the seller's description of the house, but as far as having it required to be on a government website, I don't think that that's very helpful. So I'd like to propose an amendment for that at some point. Also, the question was raised about how long the score is good for, and if it's mostly based on the structural assets of the house, then again, could the seller default, say this is what it is, this is what it was, I haven't done anything else, be able to put it forward? On the other hand, if they want to show that they've done all the repairs, that they could then ask for a new, they could get themselves a new audit. I don't support having buyers required to get it within the first 4 months. I think that people often have to, I mean, when I moved into my house, I was busy trying to figure out how to get the coat hangers put up and all kinds of other things, not thinking about how can I spend even more money on this brand new, on this house. So I would like that removed. And potentially, one of the ways to get around the issue of if a seller can't pay, and if a buyer at the transaction time, I mean, you always make your offer contingent on the inspection turning out all right. Perhaps they could also make it contingent on the audit turning out at a particular number. And at that point, the buyer could be willing to pay for the cost, just like they pay for the cost of the inspection. And so that could happen, or otherwise they could initial at closing that they've waived their right to do that. And I think that's a way of maybe helping people get the information that they need as home buyers. But you don't get the inspection done until you've pretty much set your heart on a particular property. And so I think that we need to have mechanisms that as the listing price, as the listing of the property, that's when buyers can best do the cost comparison. If you've already set your heart on a property, paid for the inspection, and then, yes, that you've got around the issue of unexpected expenses, but I just don't know that that's going to sway the
thing. I just want to clarify that four-month thing was only for the low-income proponents. Other than that, everyone is being required to do this as the seller before the home is listed.
Right. No, I understand that. Okay. But I just don't think that that's very helpful to the buyer to then be required to do what the seller was not able to do.
The buyer won't have to do this. We were only suggesting that as part of a response if the seller was a low-income seller and not able.
It was in the presentation.
Is what you're suggesting, Commissioner, that in the cases where a low-income seller qualifies for the deferral, so they wouldn't get it, you're suggesting in those circumstances the buyer doesn't need to get it. That transaction happens without a score.
Correct.
Okay.
And the buyer initials to say so rather than having to come back to you 4 months later saying,
understood,
I have or I haven't done that.
Understood.
I think those are most of my concerns. We did hear, I appreciate hearing from Commissioner-elect Hugh Daly. That's very good to have her perspective here. I think there was lots of discussion about equity issues, and particularly the concern that landlords would pass on the cost to renters, and even might be the cause of more no-cause evictions. So I really appreciate the thought that's gone into it. I do finally have to say that the financial impact and public involvement statement in this is possibly the best I've ever seen. It's really inclusive. I do appreciate the testifier from Apano saying that his group and others may not have feel that they've been that engaged, and so certainly we need to be aware of that. I'm glad you came to make that point. And I think you all have shown me over the last 4 to 8 years that we're always aware of what public involvement is and how we can do better. So, but I did appreciate having all that documented. It made it very much easier for me to figure this out.
And we should acknowledge Kyle Diesner who did the work on that. So
I had a couple of questions, and Commissioner Fish has a couple additional questions. I guess I too am wondering about new construction exemptions. The testimony about the ORS 469, whether that prohibits us from disclosing. And I do share a policy concern similar to what Commissioner Fritz just articulated about putting any information associated with a name on Portland maps or anywhere. And then there was a testimony, I guess I'm wondering about the timeliness of audits too. So I think Ms. Gillo raised this issue. So suppose I'm a geek and I want to go out and get a home energy audit just because I want to know what my home is, and I get it, and I decide not to do anything about it, and then I decide to sell my house 2 years later. Can I use that home energy audit so give us some discussion on that. And then also the question, which you can answer in writing, is multifamily, sale of multifamily units, where is that covered or not covered under our commercial or residential policies?
They're currently not covered.
Okay. And Commissioner Fish?
So I missed two questions, and then I'm going to move the amendments. In your disclosure, your impact statement for the council, it lists public involvement, has a public involvement statement, and it says that you reached out to organizations representing communities of color and tenants, organizations representing homeowners with low, moderate, or fixed incomes, and affordable housing advocates and program implementers. And I would say, in light of the Apano testimony, could you just tell us in writing which groups you reached out to that qualify for that, that are covered by those categories? And second, we had one or two people testify that this could alter the underwriting. Now, we know that underwriting's become a lot tighter because of federal law, among other things. And so I'd like your feedback on that. In Austin, for example, did they have an experience with underwriting becoming more stringent and requirements around addressing energy efficiency being worked into the financing and the closing requirements? Yes or no? What is the evidence that this disclosure in and of itself is going to change the equation in terms of underwriting and what banks require at closing? And with that, colleagues, I'd like to move the amendments as a package.
Okay. Is there a second?
I can second that. I'm also going to make some more amendments. The three on the table.
I've moved and seconded. And by doing so, this allows us to vote on these when we come back on the 7th. And it doesn't preclude us from now or in the future modifying them or proposing new amendments. But Amendment 1 does address this question of solutions to cover upfront costs of policy compliance. That was something I raised in my question, because my preference would be to have everyone play, but have some way to offset the cost for those who can't cover it. 2 would give Susan or her successor or designee the right to temporarily suspend or modify under certain circumstances. And 3 is a report back to council prior to the implementation. So I move all 3.
Okay, so moved and seconded. Please call the roll.
Aye.
Mr. Fritz?
So I'd like to move an amendment similar to number 3, that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability will develop a process to streamline scores for new construction, at least on the same timeline as number 3. So no fewer than 2 months prior to the effective date, when they're going to come back to us anyway.
So I'm not clear. What would your amendment do?
It would be to develop a process to streamline the scores for new construction.
Okay. Yeah, I guess procedurally, I just want to check with us, because I'm hoping that the information we get back may serve as a basis for potential amendments I would bring forward on the 7th. Now, I realize that would require another reading, but, you know, we still got time to do that.
Or we could slap an emergency on it.
Yeah, we could slap. So, I mean, I think some of the questions I have are along with the same questions
you
have about new
construction. Yeah, so you just prefer to wait to do that?
Yeah, I'd prefer rather than trying to do it today and needing all three of us to support it. Let's get the information back from staff, and if we need to vote on new amendments on the 7th, let's do it on the 7th.
Okay. And so that my other one, so there'd be one on the streamlining for new construction, and the Amendment 5 would be not posting on Portland Online, or Portland Maps. And I'm just wondering why was that included in the proposal in the first place?
Pardon?
Why was the posting it on portlandmaps.com part of the procedure in the
Go
first
ahead,
place?
Please. Without disclosure, this policy falls apart. It needs to be visible. We could put the requirement on the realtors to put it on the listings.
Yeah.
We chose not to do that.
Why?
We thought that would get an even less warm reaction than we got.
Well, they're required to list what school district they're in and what the property taxes are, so I don't really think that this is all that much different.
Well, there's another.
Okay, well,
there's
give
another
us some more information on it.
Yeah, there's another complication here because if you're requiring that this information be shared with the city, I assume it becomes a public record.
Yeah, and then you, as Commissioner Saltzman pointed out, then you've identified people who are low income and make them even more of a target for predatory home sales.
So, unless we get a score for everybody,
right?
Then
so
that
we'll explain all this and we'll provide it back to you before you.
Okay, and we are recessed until 2 o'clock.
Thank you very much, President.
Thank you.
So what else is important?